I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Kylie Olsen, and Music and Me is about the way songs impact our lives, from the records our parents played to the first single we bought, and even the one we want played at a funeral. I've been meeting some incredible people from the world of music to find out what songs shape their lives and careers. This month, I'm chatting with Rich Robinson. We have an open and frank conversation about his fallout with his brother and former bandmate of the Black Crowes, Chris, and his incredible new group, the Magpie Salute. So Rich, thank you for chatting to me for Music and Me. It's good to finally meet you. I feel I can't believe our paths haven't crossed before.
Exactly. It's been a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So I always start the show with a question, which is basically, if a song was to come onto the radio now that would remind you of being at home as a kid, something that maybe your parents always listened to, what would that song be?
I mean, I guess I would say, Carry On, that Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my earliest memories of listening to music was that song in particular. My dad loved it, so...
It's not bad, is it, to start there, really?
Not a bad song.
No. And do you still listen to them?
Yeah. And Stephen Stills and Manassas and all of his sort of solo records, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, mm-hmm. and Neil Young. I mean, the whole, just kind of, I think it laid a blueprint for, the sort of more organic view of music that I've always involved myself in,
Carry on, love.
And was there always music around the house when you were growing up as a kid? Are your parents musicians?
My dad was a musician. He had like a top 40 hit in the 50s. So he was a musician.
Yeah. And then what about your mum? Was she musical at all?
She knew a lot of the... She came from Nashville. My dad was from Atlanta. But my mom, just by proxy of where she came from, knew a lot of the old folk songs, It came down through the Appalachian Mountains and shifted as they came into America from England and Ireland.
So can you remember the artist that made you pick up the guitar, that made you go, okay, this is for me?
It was more like as a kid, I was like 11 or 12, and I saw, I was at a record store or something, and I remember seeing If You Want Blood, You Got It, which was an AC/DC record, and it had everything that I guess a 12-year-old boy would like think is cool, guitars, stuck in Angus with a lot of blood and stuff. But ultimately, the sound that was coming off of that, coming off of that record was astonishing. It was so intense, but really cool. And it just, that kind of thing made me wanted to start playing guitar,
Interesting, because that's like a proper rock sound, isn't it? And then you've got this with what you did with the Black Crowes and what you're doing now with Magpie Salute. It's much more in the, I suppose, it's country rock, isn't it? If you want to try and pigeonhole it, which I don't think we should always do, but if we have to.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think of it as music. I mean, things like Led Zeppelin 3 or you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or Bob Dylan when he went electric. I mean, all of that is, you know, it's such a broad palette that we pull from, you know. So if you look at, you know, what I look at rock and roll music as, which is what I play, you know, it was Joni Mitchell to Neil Diamond to the Rolling Stones to Zeppelin to the Beatles to Sly and the Family Stone to, you know, anyone in between, you know. And all the influences that they pulled from, coming from that American music and where it kind of met sort of the English folk sort of songs that came down, you know, you have African influence, you have all these things, and then that is what sort of created this modern platform that we all exist from, although I think most modern music is today has really drifted away from that. But it just covers a lot of ground. It's such a broad sort of spectrum of music. And that's kind of how it should be. I do think we tend to over force ourselves to categorize it because it really comes just down to selling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's sort of creating like a toaster oven. You know what I mean? This one's a vacuum cleaner. This genre is a toaster oven, and this one is this. Instead of looking at the overall sort of music and what it means on a bigger scale, instead of worrying about making it some sort of product, you know?
Yeah. So do you feel like that's kind of where you are now, that you're sort of able to just, or do you feel like you've always had that? You know, you've always been able to do just what you want to do, or have you felt the pressures of, okay, we've got to make a hit record. Do you feel like now that you can kind of, especially because the record label, you're on Mascot, which is a good label for, they sort of let bands do their own thing. So do you feel more that you can just do your own thing, or did you always feel like that?
So I always feel like we were able to do that. And I mean, the Black Crowes never tried to force, I mean, we never tried to write a hit. We didn't know how to write a hit. They just kind of came, you know, I mean, we were making incredibly unfashionable music when we made our first record, and I was 19. And so we just got together, made this record, and that was cool. And it was, you know, sold 7 million albums, and it was a big deal. And the way I see it is, when we were signed, no one really cared enough to tell us what to do. And then after the first record, we were sold so many records, no one could tell us what to do. So we literally just were, you know, just did what we wanted, you know. After Shake Your Moneymaker, we went in to make Southern Harmony. And my brother and I wrote the record in 2 days, and we recorded it in 8 days.
That's insane.
But people at a label would be like, I think you need to rethink this, you know. But that was like, we just got off 22 months of touring, 350 shows. We are now a band. We know, we have life experience. We have these songs that have been begging to get out, and we're just ready. We're going to go do it, not overthink it, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of Shake Your Moneymaker, I remember is when Nirvana came out for the first time.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. So it was, it was kind of like, and I remember people at our label, because we were on Geffen to start, and people at the label were like, oh, we signed some bad, you know, some band. We kicked them down to DGC. They're some punk rock band. No one really cares. And, you know, and it was like, it was Nirvana. And the record came out, and it was, you know, it's one of those things which typically happens is it catches everyone off guard. I mean, you know, bankers run labels and ran labels back then because there was a ton of money, and the amount of people that it attracted and the type of people it attracted sort of created this extreme hubris and ego from the people at the label. And a lot of times these bands are just out there doing what they do. And so something that comes absolutely unexpected, I mean, as unlikely as we were to put out a record in the midst of like hair metal, you know, when we're just writing this sort of rock and roll music that we loved. Nirvana was the same, you know, kind of, they put their record out, and bands like Poison and all these bands were huge at the time, you know, and Nirvana. And so I think the sort of juxtaposition of those two things really kind of shifted music and made people look at them and be like, yeah, I'm kind of don't want to listen to this anymore. I want to see, because, you know, the thing about sort of grunge music and our music, the only difference is we wore bell bottoms. Everyone else wore, you know, everyone else kind of wore, you know, their flannels, but they were all pulling from their, you know, idols and stuff. So Soundgarden was trying to make Black Sabbath records, and, you know, Nirvana was making this beautiful punk pop music that was, you know, for us coming up, you know, we were huge Replacements fans, and the Replacements were a band in America that wrote kind of on the forefront of writing these pop melodies over this punk rock kind of music. So it was pretty cool.
So what did you think of Nirvana when you first heard it?
I thought the record was great. I thought it was brilliant, yeah.
That's funny, isn't it? Like, you were around at the same time, but like you say, completely different. Yeah, exactly. But you were both a curveball.
We were both a curveball, yeah. So it just means that, you know, no matter how much marketing you can do and no matter how many like times you sit and try to have some sort of market research and ask people what they think, they don't know what they like until it's kind of given to them, you know?
Yeah.
And so and I think that they're a lot smarter than most people give them credit for.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so there's been a cynical push in the world of music to just dumb it down. You know, producers tell you that, labels tell you that, dumb it down, people are stupid, they don't like this kind of music, and that's just not true. Mm-hmm. Because the things that catch off guard, that are sort of sincere and authentic, are what actually catch on and make people wake up and kind of go, oh yeah, I like that, and I like that because of the feeling that it ignites in me, and I can sort of connect with that piece of music, you know.
So what was it like growing up then? Because like you say, you were touring loads, and then you know, the album came out and stuff, and you were ready just to make another album because you were tight.
Yeah.
And you had the songs. I mean, but obviously, you know, you were in a band with your brother. So obviously were you playing loads as kids? Or was it like lots
no,
of,
no, what, not at
all. How did it work?
It was just, you know, we immediately started writing songs because we weren't very good, you know. I mean, I didn't start playing guitar till I was like 15.
Yeah, that's really late, isn't
it? Yeah, it's pretty late.
But were you doing anything before that?
No.
Oh my God.
No, my dad had a couple of guitars and we would bang around, but he didn't like it because they were too nice, you know. So, and he had his guitars, you know. So when we were, maybe it was 14, right before I turned 15, for Christmas, he bought my brother and I some instruments and we're like, all right, leave my stuff alone.
Yeah.
You can play these, you know, figure it out. And we were kind of in our punk rock phase at the time. We were way into bands like the Dead Kennedys and X and the Cramps and those kinds of bands, which I think just part of a musical journey that maybe most people go through, you know. But it's about 6 months, short-lived, you know. That's about all we could get out of that,
yeah.
You know. And then this band from Georgia came, and it was called REM. And we had never really liked Southern rock music. It wasn't our thing. We didn't listen to Skynyrd. We didn't listen to those bands. But REM spoke to us in the sense of what, like, they represented something from the South that was never represented before. I mean, it was artistic, it was lush, it was beautiful.
Did you realize that you were going to do it professionally? You know, you could be a musician. Do you feel like it just happened?
Yeah, there was no planning, never a plan. Just kind of was like, oh, let's do a band, let's do this, let's figure this out. You know, there was no, you know, no. It would have been cool to be in a band, but we never really thought about it. We just kind of did it, you know.
And you mentioned earlier touring. Is it true that when you first went on tour, you toured with Aerosmith, and then you went on tour with ZZ Top, but you got sacked? You got kicked off for bad behavior? Is that true?
Well, we did a couple of tours with a small band in the States, opening in clubs, and then there was another band that was kind of like this heavy metal band that we toured with, and then we got this arena tour, which was opening for Aerosmith. It was great. We went out for 6 weeks, and it was a huge eye-opener. We learned a ton. And then we toured with Heart.
Oh, great. Then, I love Heart. Yeah. They're a brilliant band.
Then we toured with Robert Plant. And then by that time, we had gotten to this place where we did a whole headline tour. And then in like between March and December, we had sold a million albums that first year of just touring. With all the, and then from December to January, it popped up to 3 million. I mean, we just started selling a ton of records and like, it had kind of caught this wave, but we were opening for ZZ Top because we had booked it, you know, months before all this was happening.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, we were supposed to do a couple of legs with ZZ Top, and, you know, my brother was running his mouth about corporate sponsorship, and ZZ Top was sponsored by Miller Lite, and my brother was saying some, you know, he was disillusioned, you know what I mean? You go around, you see these bands, and they're selling 20,000 tickets a night, and there's just a greed element to that. Mm-hmm. And it just was like, why do you need this extra kind of cash? You know what I mean? Like, just to sort of sell yourself out. And Chris was an idealist, and so he just let it known that he kind of thought it was bullshit, and they weren't happy about it, and they kept trying to tell us to be quiet. And Chris, we didn't, you know, we weren't. We're just like, I just kind of think this is bullshit, you know? And so, whether you like it or not, or believe, you know, whatever, that's how he felt he wanted to be. So actually, when we got to Atlanta, you know, because we were playing two or three nights at this place called the Omni in Atlanta with the ZZ Top. The first night, Rolling Stone flew down to do like the first major feature of us, and that was the night we got kicked off. And so it got bumped to a cover. So we were on the cover of Rolling Stone, because it was huge news. I mean, the next day it was on the front cover of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and it spread pretty quickly. And so, yeah, that's what happened. But we were okay.
You were okay. And part of, you know, that's kind of like being a proper rock and roll band, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's ultimately what we saw, you know. We were just like, it's just becoming corporate, and it's just this coming, this sort of chipper, you know. It's just, there doesn't have to necessarily be rules or the way things are done. Things can be done in a lot of different ways. And, you know, look, people have to be able to live by the choices they choose to live by. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we live by our choice, and ZZ Top lives by their choice. And, that, and you know, that's cool. That's fine. That's who you are. I mean, now that we're older, we're just kind of like, hey, you know, look, they were doing what they do. But it was really up to us to choose whether we wanted to be a part of that or not. Mm-hmm. But we were kind of too young not to see that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we took a stand.
A good stand. And what was it like touring with Robert Plant? I mean, because I'm assuming you're big Zeppelin fans.
Yeah, we were big fans, and Robert couldn't have been cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to kid around with him. I'm like, my hair is better than yours, man. And he was like, I've got a plane. And so...
Enough said.
Yeah, so he would come on stage and jam with us at soundcheck, and he'd want to play Neil Young songs. And I remember one time I walked off stage just because I was like, you know, like, it wasn't going anywhere. And I was like, all right, well, I'm done, you know, kind of walked off. And he, kiddingly, but he came up, was like, you told Chris, you tell your brother never to walk off my stage again. And he would come in our dressing room and take a lamp and smash it and run out and then be like, you broke the lamp, you know.
Oh, my God.
He was really cool. Yeah, he was very fun. Really cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you know, you've been in lots of, you know, various bands, Black Crowes, obviously, Hooker Brown. Where does that name come from?
We were just, you know, actually John Hogg, the singer of the Magpie Salute, and I, when the Crowes first split up in 01, you know, I just wanted to put together a band, and I'd met John. John was in a band called Moke that had opened for the Crowes in 98 or 99 or something. And so when the band split up, I love John's voice and I liked the way he wrote. And so I just called him up. I'm like, do you want to start this band and see what happens? And so he came out. It was cool. And we, you know, really liked each other. It was great. So we were trying to think of things to name it. And John was really into Buka White. And I remember going to my friend's restaurant in the Village in New York and walked by a hookah bar. And I'm like, what about hookah something? You know, Buka, hookah, hookah brown. You know, just thought it was something cool. And we did it. And it was cool. But I think everyone's expectations around the Black Crowes thing kind of ruined it, you know. Everyone in the band, you know, hired people I'd never played with before, didn't know very well, and it just kind of sunk into this zone. But it tends to happen. The Crowes are kind of like a tornado, you know.
Yeah.
Like just that whole thing. I mean, there's so many people that come in and get spit out, and it's pretty negative and dramatic and all of these elements. And so...
Do you need an element of that to make great songs, though?
I don't think so.
You've come out the other side of it, and now you're in Magpie Salute, and you seem like you're very happy as a band. And, you know, do you feel like, oh, actually, you don't need that? It's quite nice not having all the drama.
It's nice not having drama, although there's always drama. And that's still in me, in a sense. Like, I experienced that for a long time.
Are you still a bit of a drama queen?
No. Not me, but I mean, like... You know, I believe that creation comes from your life, you know what I mean? Like, you write these songs, it's based on your life experience, it's based on music and film and TV and divorce and love and loss and kids and, I mean, everything life. And so I believe it kind of creates this, like, you know, what I call like a stained glass kind of prism that all of your, it's a filter that all of your creation comes through. And so that, the pain of that band that was around that band and the misery of it, I think came... You know, we'll always be there, but it more as like a life experience. We'll always bring that to sort of how I write. There's always a melancholy element. I mean, it sucks not to have a relationship with your brother, but it also sucks that the relationship is so wrought with toxicity and negativity. So it's just kind of a bummer, you know. But this band is really cool, and we're pretty vigilant about not going down that road and not falling into those traps. I don't want to sit in the back lounge and like bitch about everyone and just be immature jackasses like most bands are. You know what I mean? Like, fuck that guy. When he played that solo, he's a dick. You know, whatever it may be, we don't do that anymore. We all, like me and Mark and Sven, all experienced that in the Black Crowes. And we are pretty sensitive, highly sensitive about not going down that road.
That's fair enough. I can understand that completely. So do you think that you'll ever be able to sort of build a bridge with your brother again and maybe go down the Black Crowes route?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's just one of those things. It's just too volatile, you know. And it's
were you always like that as kids as well?
No, I mean, I kind of consider our family, we were really close family. It was just four of us. It was me and my brother and my parents. And so it wasn't, you know, we fought like brothers did, but it wasn't like some absurd thing. It was just was what it was. Sometimes we were smart asses to each other, sometimes we fought, but it was never like that. You know, as sort of fame and power and money and, you know, all that horseshit that gets involved,
it complicates
everything really a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And if you don't deal with your idiosyncrasies and your insecurities, that can really kind of take you over. Yeah. And then you can be a gigantic asshole.
Well, man, I hope you can sort it out, because it is horrible, like you say, when you don't talk to your brother. Or a family member. That's tough. It's tough for everyone. Parents and everything. You know,
definitely.
But Magpie Salute, I mean, do you feel like this is it, this is your little baby now, and you're in a really good place musically?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reason I put it together was because I was thinking about, as I get older, you know, it's kind of cool to make solo records, you know, because it's like, I kind of liken it to finger painting, you know what I mean? I just get to get in there and do whatever I want. It's cool. It's like, you know, no one's going to tell me, you know, not that anyone ever did, but it's like, man, we could try everything. And it's cool. But it's just you in a studio, you know? And so I was thinking about sort of like band dynamics and dynamics of being a human, and as we get older and the things we have to deal with as we get older as people, you know, and then really trying to be grateful for the things that that have happened. I mean, there's been some astonishing things that have happened in the Black Crowes, touring with the Rolling Stones and having Jimmy Page be in our band for a year, and you know, Bob Dylan knows my name and told me I wrote a beautiful song. You know what I mean? Like these things that in a million years I could never imagine, you know? And so I was, I looked at it, I was like, well, you know, look at these amazing things, you know, things touring with Neil Young and, you know, and all of my favorite heroes. And, you know, how does that, what, you know, what is that, how does that play into sort of my life experience? And it made me have a tremendous appreciation for the people that I have these amazing sort of musical relationships with, people that, you know, when they come in the room with me and I can write whatever I write, which is pretty unconventional. It's the way that I write music. I play in multiple tunings and different time signatures and these kinds of things, and there's a lot of subtlety to it, and it's just how I've always written, and it's natural to me. And to have these people that I don't have to, I can just play something and they just jump in, and what they play is perfect. And, you know, what a cool gift. I mean, what an amazing thing to be able to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
I had it with my brother, but you know, Mark Ford, Eddie Harsh from the Crows, I had that. And then also my guys from my solo band, my drummer, Joe Magistro, and John Hogg, and these people. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. So as I was thinking about that, the show came up, and it was 3 days in one place in Woodstock, New York. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to reach out to Mark Ford and, you know, see if he comes in and see what happens. And he was just like, I'll be there. I don't care what it is. And I hadn't spoken to him in 10 years. And so I decided to reach out to Eddie Harsh. And Ed was like, I'll be there. And I was like, okay, cool. And what I liked about it was the inclusion of these two guys in this context of my life being brought into this other context. You know, like I'm playing with my solo band and these solo songs and what, you know. So we recorded these three shows, and it was, you know, the minute Mark Ford and I started playing, it was just that thing that you don't, I can't put a finger on. I don't understand why. But that's how it was. And Ed was the same way. And so Eddie came up to me and said, you know, we should put this together and just do it, you know. And I was like, yeah, that would be cool. And so I left and finished my solo tour. I mean, I was on tour. I did these three shows and then just continued. And I was like, what would we call it? What would we do? How would we do this? This could be kind of fun. Mm. And so I kind of came up with all the stuff, came up with all the people, and then said, well, let's just put a show up and see what happens. And then that sold out in 20 minutes. And then the other three shows sold out. And it was like, okay, cool. So there's interest, you know. And then Eddie passed away 2 weeks after that. You know, he died, he overdosed. And, you know, the whole thing was like, I'm clean, man. I'm coming down and I'm going to be there with you. And you know, Mark saw him. He's like, I don't think he's clean. And then he went home and was so excited. And we were, you know, we were getting him his visa to come to the States. And, you know, he was really like every day on the phone working, but he was still using. And he got a hold of some bad stuff. And, he passed away. And that was kind of a shock. But it was, you know, it was sad and shocking and just like, God, man. But his excitement about the whole thing really did, you know, kind of was the catalyst for everything. You know, he's like, yeah, let's do this. And, you know, so we definitely continued. And it just kind of grew from there. Everything was just like, well, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Let's check this out. Oh, yeah, shit. We recorded that record last summer. Let's put that out and see. It's just, you know, covers and Crow songs. Let's just go out and do this. And it was more about just a year-long celebration with 10 people, you know, based on a template of what I'd set up in Woodstock. You know, I brought in a couple of singers and I had my band of Mark and Ed. And like, let's go do this and just look at it like a review and let's see what happens. And then that went. And then we started wanting to write new songs and become a band. So I kind of focused at the end of that. You know, we wrote some songs and focused and kind of had a core band, which was six of us, you know.
Yeah.
And then this is now us stepping into our skin and what this means.
And you've got another bird name as well. Where does the name come from?
Well, the Magpie Salute. I always like the word magpie for some reason.
Yeah, it's a great name, actually.
It's an interesting word. You know, even just like, wow, it's cool. And I was just researching and I was trying to think of what to call this. And I was like, I don't know. But I felt like magpies are cousins of the Crow. And, you know, it's kind of like we're a cousin of that band, you know? But magpies have a light and a dark element to them. And crows are all dark. So I thought that was kind of cool to have that balance, you know? And then I found out about the salute, and people salute the magpie to, you know, the magpie salute to ward off a bad day or bad luck. And then what does a salute mean? A salute means we come in peace, which I thought was cool. And the way that you salute a magpie is by saying morning, captain, which is a Black Crow song. And so I kind of felt like all of these things kind of were screaming, like, you need to name it this.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So that's where it came from.
It's a really cool name. I love it. And so when have you got a new album? What's happening with that? When does that come out? Because it's not out yet, is it?
No, it comes out August 10th.
August 10th.
So we made two records. So right. High Water 1 and 2.
Okay.
And so the first record comes out August 10th. But the second record comes out early next year, and we recorded all of it, but mm-hmm. it was just so much material. We didn't really want to start with a box set, you know, okay. So it was like 28 songs. We were like, maybe we should stagger this a little bit, so, yeah.
That's fair enough. Yeah. And then are you going to tour the album after that?
Yeah, we start actually a month before in the States, mm-hmm. so we go out on tour. July 1st is our first show in Colorado.
Yeah.
And then we tour with a band called Government Mule in the States.
Yeah,
yeah. Them and the Avett Brothers, okay. And it's like a package thing for some shows, and some shows with just Government Mule, and then we're kind of co-billing with Blackberry Smoke, and then doing headline shows, and then doing festivals, and then we come over here in August for 5 shows, okay. Just acoustic.
Cool.
And we're playing London at this club called Oslo, but it's sold out already. So, so then we come back in November. To do a full European UK tour.
Great. So we're not going to get rid of you, which is brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. What's it like working with Patti Smith?
She's great. You know, Patti, I had some of her band members play with me a couple of times, you know, like when I would do a couple of solo things. And Tony Shanahan, who's her bass player, and this guy Jack Petrozelli. And so they were just really cool. And then I even had some of their tech, like her techs. And the Crow's old tour manager worked at Arista and when Patti was there. And so I had all these sort of ancillary people that we had in common. And when I moved to the city, I was living in the West Village, and Patti lives in the West Village. And everyone that I knew that knew Patti was like, you need to go say hey to her. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not that kind of person. I don't go up and say hey, you know. And so I was in this restaurant, tiny restaurant in the West Village, right up the street from my place. And I went in there and Patti was there, and I'm like, and she was sitting right by the bathroom. And so I'm like, oh, I gotta, you know, had to go to the bathroom. And I walk and I'm like, oh shit, you know, like I'm, you know, I didn't want to go by and say anything, but I did. So I came out and I'm like, you know, hey Patti, how's it going? I know Barry and Tony. And she just kind of looked up at me. And it was funny because she's so observant, you know, like when she met me, Boy in the Bubble was playing, which was that Paul Simon song. Mm. So she just looked up at me and she was really sweet. Couldn't have been sweeter. And that was it. I'm like, yeah, nice to meet you. You know, she's like, yeah, nice to meet you too. And that was it. And then I was walking around the West Village the next day or 2 days or 3 days after. I can't remember. And I get a call on my phone and I didn't know who it was. And I answer and she goes, hey. And I'm like, hey. She goes, it's that girl you met in that bar the other night. And she, you know, she's, and I was like, she goes, it's Patti. I'm like, oh, hey, Patti. You know, she goes, I got your number from Barry. She goes, I didn't know who you were or something. She said, I called my son Jackson and said, I met this guy, Rich Robinson. And he goes, Mom, do you know who you were talking to? You know, that, and he loves the Crow. So he said I was a great guitar player or whatever. So she said, do you want to come play on my record? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be great, you know. So she was doing a covers record, and she goes, I don't like Paul Simon. I kind of think he's an asshole. But when I met you, Boy in the Bubble was playing on the PA, you know, playing on the music in the restaurant. And I figured that was a sign, so maybe you should come play on my record. And I was like, okay. And then she chose to do an Allman Brothers song too.
Yeah.
Midnight Rambler. And she said that she was a writer in the 70s, and that she, one of her first interviews was interviewing them, the Allman Brothers, who were playing at Madison Square Garden, and she just thought it would be cool for me to play on it. And I was like, yeah, that's great, you know.
That's an amazing story. Yeah. Really cool story.
And it was cool, and we just became friends, you know. So I played in New York, and she would come sing, and then I had her open for the Crows a couple of times. Mm. And Patty would get on stage and sing and you know, write lyrics just on the spot. And it was amazing, you know, so.
What a wonderful story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like that stuff. Just how it happens by accident, quite organically.
Absolutely, yeah. And she's one of the most open people I've ever met and open to things like that. So it just kind of, and I'm pretty open about that stuff too, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well, Rich, it was lovely chatting to you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. These are the days.
Now, if you love the show, then make sure you subscribe and tell your mates about it as well. And if you have any suggestions on who you think I should get on next time, then please let me know. I want to hear from you. Get in touch on Twitter and Instagram at Kylie Olson.
Music and Me is produced by The Podcast Works and One Some Media.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.